welcome to the latest Care Home Management Magazine COVID-19 podcast special roundtable. Today we're looking at what the CQC emergency support framework will mean for care homes. We're going to look at how the regulator will communicate with care homes, what it means for providers, how they can interact with the CQC, and what the legal implications of this framework will be over the next few weeks and possibly months compared to what happens with the usual inspection regime. I'm Steve Hemsley. I'm the publishing editor of Care Home Management Magazine, and this podcast is sponsored by care home marketing experts Smooth Digital, helping fill care and nursing home beds with private paying residents. Right, I'm joined by two experts today. I'm delighted to welcome Neil Grant. He's partner at law firm Gordon's Partnership. Neil's worked in the health and social care sector for almost 30 years. And he's joined by David Beattie, who's a health and social care management consultant with Care Ideals and a former hospital director. Welcome to you both. I really appreciate your time on the podcast. Trying to make the best of what is a very difficult situation for everybody. Now, before we get into the ins and outs and the nitty gritty of the emergency framework, maybe you could both just spend a little time telling us about yourselves and your companies. If I can start with you, Neil.
Yes, thank you very much, Steve, for the introduction. Yeah, my name is Neil Grant. I'm a health and social care regulatory lawyer, and I've been doing it for quite a number of years, since the early 1990s. And I started off, I was acting for registration authorities originally, both in those days, health authorities and local authorities, but also providers. And then I changed tack, and I had quite a number of years where I was acting for regulators. So I acted for the likes of the Commission for Social Care Inspection, the Healthcare Commission, and latterly, the Care Quality Commission in its first year. But after that, I then decided to change, and I went back to acting just for providers. And I've been doing that for the last 10 years or so. And currently I'm at a firm called Gordon's Partnership LLP, and we're based in London and Guildford, although like the rest of the legal world at the moment, I'm working from home.
And David, if you could tell us a bit about yourself and a bit about Care Ideals.
Thanks, Steve. So my name is David Beattie. I've been working in health and social care since 2001. All of my experience is in the independent sector. Initially, I ran and managed large psychiatric hospitals and worked in various roles, hospital director, registered manager, managing director. And much of the work that I did, more by accident than design, was sharp end crisis management. And I've worked in various parts of the country as well. At the back end of 2014, I established Care Ideals, which is a consultancy service providing support and guidance for social care providers, care homes, nursing homes, domiciliary care providers, and supported living providers. Since the beginning of 2015, I've assisted 67 different providers in all aspects of running a care business.
Fantastic. Excellent. Thank you both. Two gentlemen perfectly placed to talk about the emergency framework, which obviously was unveiled on the 1st of May. So we're going into June now. People have seen it and had some things to say on it. It's all about obviously seeing where care homes still need to help with managing themselves and support. If I could start with you, Neil, I mean, what would your advice be to care homes who have read about the framework and might be ready or waiting for their phone call? Because this is a very different way, isn't it, of interacting with the CQC?
It is an unusual way. Although having said that, I suppose really since the start of the pandemic, they will have had contact, or they should have had contact, with their inspectors via telephone, because as we know, CQC suspended inspections on the 16th of March, and that was the right thing to do. I mean, clearly you could have thousands of inspectors going between services, potentially transmitting the virus, and also the risk to inspectors as well in becoming infected. And equally, I think the burden on those providers, particularly with the surge in cases that we noted, obviously, through sort of March, April. It seems to be abating a little bit now, but clearly there's still a problem out there. And what I would like to do is obviously thank providers, managers and care workers for all their sort of hard work over this period. I suppose, first of all, just to make some sort of preliminary points, I think, about the framework. I mean, CQC is in a bit of a bind, really, because they can't inspect, which is obviously one of their core functions, but the legislation is still there. They need to monitor providers as best they can through this period to ensure that they discharge their primary statutory responsibility, which is to protect service users in those services. So it's not been easy, and I think, you know, that should be acknowledged. And really, I suppose, over a six-week period, they developed this framework. CQC describes it as a structured framework and a digital tool, which basically derives from its current assessment framework for frameworks for health and social care. So obviously, at the moment, you've got you had CQC Insight, which was their sort of intelligence database for each service. They've now created a sort of COVID-19 version working with Microsoft. But I think the important thing to remember really is that that this framework, which will involve inspectors contacting individual services, is very much a performance assessment of the actual service in terms of how they're coping during the pandemic. And CQC are clearly prioritising those telephone calls in relation to services that will have had COVID-19 outbreaks, but equally those services that that may have been subject to enforcement before the pandemic or may have been rated inadequate. So I think that needs to be borne in mind. So for providers and managers, they need to be wary. It's not just a friendly, supportive chat. They shouldn't be frightened of the conversation. It's important that CQC is obviously sort of engaging and seeking to support providers. But it is a review. It is a performance assessment. And there is a digital sort of risk assessment tool that sits behind it. So I think that needs to be borne in mind. And I suppose from my point of view, I'm slightly sort of concerned about some of the sort of mixed messages that are coming out from CQC, because on the one hand, they say, well, this is, you know, a sort of supportive chat. We won't necessarily cover all the questions. You don't need to prepare for it. But on the other hand, they say, well, in actual fact, it could lead on to further inquiries. It could lead on to an inspection if there are serious concerns identified and potentially enforcement action. And the content of the discussions, although the summary record of the discussion won't be shared with partner agencies, those concerns, if they do identify concerns, will be shared with directors of adult social services and perhaps other sort of partner bodies. And CQC acknowledges that in supplying that information, they will work with partner agencies to minimise risk where it's necessary, which of course is entirely appropriate and right. But it's important, I think, that providers, managers, in gearing up for these calls, do actually prepare for them. And they obviously cover four main areas: safe care and treatment, staffing arrangements, protection from abuse, assurance processes, monitoring and risk management. So these are sort of familiar areas that providers will be, you know, have seen in relation to CQC regulation in the past. But obviously there's going to be very much a pandemic flavour to the questioning, particularly around adequacy of staffing, adequacy, supply of PPE, all of those matters, infection prevention control. So those are sort of areas, obviously, that will be sort of looked at and developed during the conversation. And another issue I'd like to raise is obviously that there's going to be the creation of what is called a summary record on the back of the discussion. And that won't be considered to be an inspection report. There won't be any ratings that flow from this. And indeed, that record won't be published on the CQC website. And CQC have tried to say, well, actually, it's not a regulatory process and there's no factual accuracy aspect to it. And indeed, the record itself will just be sort of a yes-no set of answers to the question, standard responses, with a short summary box at the end, only allowing about 250 words. So it's not going to be a detailed document by any means. But if there are any issues that arise out of the telephone conversation or the content of the summary record, and particularly if a service is judged to be not managing and needing support, then if there are issues, then they need to be reflected back. They need to go back to the inspector and point those out. Because CQC has been quite clear that the content of these records, to work together with other intelligence they will hold, will be used for sort of regulatory planning, both now, but also after the pandemic. And it will remain on the record. And indeed, it's highly likely that if members of the public were to do Freedom of Information Act requests, those summary records would be disclosable. So I think those are some general statements that I would like to make, and preparation, I think, is key. The questions are now out there, the 15 questions, and indeed they're actually on the CQC website. It's good that CQC is supporting. I think that's great, and signposting. But at the same time, a dose of realism, this actually is a regulatory process.
Yeah, thank you. I'm going to ask David in a second about the need for preparation, but you touched on there about the right to reply and the provider's right to question what might come out of these sort of phone calls. I mean, that is very important, isn't it, that they can still challenge. Do you think there's anything different in this way of doing things?
Well, I think, I was slightly concerned when CQC said it wasn't a regulatory process, because really everything that CQC does should be a regulatory process falling under the legislation, because otherwise it would be unlawful. They say it's not an inspection. Well, I think that's highly debatable. I mean, it's quite clearly an assessment, a review of a service, a performance review that has been developed from the existing frameworks. And typically, of course, after an inspection, you'd have a right to put in fact and accuracy comments within a certain period. And CQC say, well, that's not necessary because of X, Y, and Z. It's not going to be published, so on and so forth. But it's a public body. This is a record. It's going on the record, and it will be used potentially in terms of taking action against services. So it must be right that an individual, a service provider, can go back and actually say, well, actually, this is inaccurate. This misrepresents the situation. We don't feel that we're sort of not coping in relation to, you know, these particular areas. So I think that's important, because it seems to me that the approach in the document of having sort of yes, no answers, it's sort of binary, really, whereas in actual fact, real life is far more nuanced and grey, and things will be changing anyway. And I think the other thing to say is that through this process, it appears that what's likely that these changes or these questions will be changed over time as the pandemic becomes perhaps endemic rather than pandemic, and we move on through this process. And also, I think the understanding is that there will be regular calls to providers, so it's not just a one-off situation. It'll go on, you know, perhaps over a period of time.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? And yeah, I mean, how long it will last. I mean, over to you, David. I mean, in terms of preparation, I mean, it's going to be at least, isn't it, for the next few months. And it's something care homes having to get used to, not being able to have an inspector in their premises, showing them around, giving them a feel for the culture of what's going on. It's purely a Q&A. What would you say to care homes in terms of preparation and you know, whether they should be worried? What's your advice?
I don't think care homes or any other provider needs to be worried about this process. I think CQC had to do something. I think it would have been a lot worse if they hadn't have done anything. But in terms of being worried about this, I would say definitely not. I think the key is you have to prepare. And I think the key starting point for preparing is look at this in terms of how are you managing the risk. Because if you look at any CQC inspection, it, you know, you cut it down to its bare bones, so to speak. A CQC inspection is about how are you managing risk. And here we have a very specific risk on the back of the coronavirus pandemic, and it's how did you manage that risk? How have you supported your residents or your clients? How have you supported your staff? How have you changed day-to-day operational practices, provision of PPE, updating policies and procedures? So I think you absolutely, the key to this is preparation, but focusing on how are you managing the risks that have been posed and that everybody's facing.
Yeah, and in terms of preparation, I suppose, and to Neil's point, that this is going to go on for a while and that the questions are going to have to be adapted, aren't they, as we go through this pandemic and it moves into a maybe lesser risk area. Do you think communication is going to be vital here? Are you confident that the CQC will be able to communicate with providers adequately so they can be as well prepared as they can?
I think so. I think some of the information that Neil has shared with me in the last couple of days and some of the information that I've obtained from clients, et cetera, and looking at things on the internet, I think CQC is learning about this the same as everybody else is, but they are definitely communicating more, which I think is vital. You know, providers need to know what the lay of the land is so that they can prepare. And I think it's a two-way communication as well. I think it's providers feeding back to CQC about where they are at, and then CQC telling providers this is what we expect.
Yeah, I mean, Neil, just quickly back to you on that point about communication. I mean, are you confident that the CQC will
be able to keep effectively communicate as we go through the pandemic for however long is needed? I mean, are they good at that sort of thing, do you think?
Well, I mean, that's a good question. I mean, the whole notion of collaboration and transparency, I think, is absolutely critical here, as you say, both on the part of the regulator and on the part of the individual services. And I'm encouraged, as is David, really, with sort of the improvement in the flow of information that's been coming out of CQC over the last week or so, after a sort of period, I suppose, perhaps of several weeks, where we weren't getting a lot of information coming through, perhaps because they were still developing this digital tool over that period. And of course, they've had myriad pressures on them as well. They had the national lead for testing, and has been taken away from them there. But they've had a lot to think about and digest. So I do hope that this new approach, because it does seem to be a sort of new approach, will lead to a sort of change, really, in terms of how regulation operates in this country, I think, because we do need to have positive, sort of open, collaborative relationships as between sort of providers and regulators. It's not a them or us sort of situation at all. So, and I think the pandemic has really drawn that into sharp focus, particularly where CQC can't go in and carry out their normal inspection function. So I think that's right. And I think maybe CQC, looking to the future, will say, well, how can we perhaps be more of a supportive agency, an improvement agency, rather than this rather command control approach, this compliance approach, which has sort of seemed to have dictated the way in which CQC has operated over several years now. When I started off as a lawyer, I always used to say to the sector that inspectors had this balancing act. They were both guides and counsellors, but they were also investigative officers and prosecutors. And it's not always an easy balance to be had there. But I think to an extent, the pendulum had swung perhaps too far towards compliance and in enforcement. And I do hope now that we will have perhaps a more balanced approach to regulation that will flow from this particular sort of situation.
You're listening to the Care Home Management Magazine podcast.
Hi, Richard.
Hey, Johnny, how's it going?
Richard, not the best. I'm still struggling to fill the empty beds in the home.
Oh, no. Have you given the guys at Smooth Digital a call?
No. Could they help?
Sure, they help care home owners like you and me fill our beds with private paying residents. They can market you online on Google and Facebook.
Oh yeah? I better give them a call.
You'll be crazy not to, Johnny. I've built up a waiting list working with Smooth Digital. Just go on Google and search Smooth Digital.
S-M-O-O-T-H.
100% Smooth Digital.
You're a lifesaver.
Well, welcome back to the Care Home Management Magazine, a special COVID-19 podcast looking at the CQC Emergency Support Framework. My name is Steve Hemsley. I'm the publishing editor at Care Home Management Magazine. I'm joined today by two experts, Neil Grant, who's a partner at law firm Gordon's Partnership, and David Beattie, who's a health and social care consultant with Care Ideals. Now, David, before the break there, we were talking to Neil. He was talking about the supportive role of the CQC, etc. Now, we've covered it on a few podcasts recently about how care homes are maybe seeing their relationship change with the CQC. They're seeing different inspectors, etc. I mean, from your experience and the advice you're giving your sort of clients, do you think care homes will welcome this new way of doing it, whether it's a hybrid or not? Or do you think they will be sort of quite keen to be able to get the inspectors back into their care home to see the bigger picture, I suppose?
The key advantage of going into a care home or a hospital, etc., is that you actually get a sense of what is actually going on, which is a lot more difficult to do over Zoom or, you know, a telephone call, etc. So I think CQC would go back to doing the on-site type of inspections, but I think for now probably this is the status quo for at least the next few months, and at some stage CQC might decide that they might do like a hybrid type of model. But I think it's key that they do carry on going into the different care homes, nursing homes, hospitals, etc. But I think in terms of providers, I think it is just about open and honest communication, letting the inspector or your local authority know what is happening in the home, which obviously puts them in a better position because they're aware of what is happening, and there aren't any surprises then for CQC. So I think very important is prepare, and then also just keep in constant communication with the inspector so that they are aware of what is happening. I think as well, CQC will be concerned that if there is a second wave of coronavirus infections, how much more damage is that going to do to care homes, to nursing homes, etc. So they need to be aware of that from that perspective as well. It's not just about what is happening at this exact time, but what happens if we have a second wave of infections?
Yes, it's got to be adaptable, hasn't it? The system's got to be adaptable. I mean, David, I don't know if your clients, obviously, I assume they are scattered around geographically. I mean, do we know what's happening in sort of Scotland and Wales here? And are there going to be any many regional differences? Are you aware of any differences at all?
I'm not aware. The vast majority of my clients are all England-based.
And Neil, what about you? Are you aware of any sort of geographical differences or what it might mean, different sort of two-tier sort of system, inspection system?
No. My understanding is that inspection has been stopped, sort of across the various jurisdictions. But I do work in Wales. I don't do any work in Scotland. I'm not qualified to do that. But no, I mean, just coming back to the issue about CQC, they are in a difficult position because they do realise, I think, the intense pressures that are out there on providers at the moment. And we got, I think, really a sort of flavour of that in terms of the sort of paper that they've just published, their COVID-19 insight. And again, I think this is a positive sign of CQC being sort of more open and sort of candid, really, with what the situation is like out there. And of course, that creates its own problems for CQC because ultimately they are there to implement the legislation and the standards in the sector, albeit obviously remotely at the moment. But I think we may see a situation where CQC inspectors will have to go out and do a limited number of inspections, probably sort of wearing sort of full PPE, because there are going to be a minority of services that are going to really struggle, I think, at this time. I mean, we know the sector was struggling before this. And it's not just obviously care homes. We're talking about sort of home care services as well under adult social care services. This model will obviously apply ultimately to all sectors, but they're sort of prioritising it at the moment under adult social care. And we get a flavour, I think, of that as well in relation to the post that CQC put out about how it will share information with directors of adult social services, where they talk about how they may well need to respond to serious safeguarding concerns, particularly where you may have drops in staffing, for example. That could lead to problems. There's the risk of closed cultures as well. I mean, the Walton Hall problem in the Northeast, I mean, that was something they were aware of before, but now we obviously have a situation where all care homes are technically closed services, apart from essential visitors. So I think that they're really weighing up how they're going to sort of respond to this. So yes, they say their primary aim is to support and to signpost to partners in the localities, but equally they may well need to intervene and apply their sort of enforcement powers, their tools. So providers need to be aware of that, and clearly that's something that will need to be sort of considered. And at the same time, I don't want to sort of put fear into providers, because CQC is saying as well that any decision of an enforcement nature would go to one of their panels, and ultimately it would have to go to one of their chief inspector, Kate Taroney, for adult social care. So they are only seeing this as being sort of an extreme situation that would have to be responded to. And even then, top management within CQC would be making the decisions. But it does reinforce the importance, I think, of making sure that these records are entirely accurate. And indeed, there may be situations when providers will need to obtain legal advice.
Yeah, I mean, David, to pick up Neil's point there about whether, just how supportive, I suppose, a CQC can be and how it needs to be there as an enforcer, because I think there was a story out today, a survey, I haven't got it in front of me, about members of the public more wary about you know, sending relatives, loved ones into care homes because of what's happened over the last few weeks. I mean, this is it, isn't it? I mean, the CQC is walking a tricky sort of balance tightrope here. It wants to be supportive for providers, but it's also got to be shown to have teeth.
Absolutely. I think they are in quite a difficult position, particularly because the situation is so unprecedented, where you don't want to make things really difficult for providers who are trying their best, but you have to obviously balance that with making sure that clients and residents are still safe. And I think that's something that CQT are going to ponder over the next few weeks and months, about how can we maintain the balance between still being the regulator and enforcing what we need to enforce, while still being supportive for providers that do need that additional bit of support. I think particularly your smaller providers, and I know from having spoken to a couple of clients, smaller providers, that they have struggled, where we don't really know what to do. So we're doing the best that we can, and we're making it up as we go along. So I think for providers like that, a little bit of support from CQC would probably be massively appreciated. But CQC are in a difficult position.
Yes. And David, just in terms of whether your clients would welcome it to be continued, extended, this more telephone-based inspection, you said nothing can replace going in, but do you think some providers would welcome if this was continued and became sort of the new normal in many ways?
I think some would, but I think it probably wouldn't be ideal. I think it'll make things a lot more difficult for CQC to do their jobs as effectively as possible. And I can talk about that from, you know, my experience. You know, you can talk to people on the phone, you can talk to clients on the phone, providers on the phone, and you get a picture. But then when you actually go to the domiciliary care provider or the supported living service or the care home, you have to actually go there to properly understand the atmosphere, the culture, etc. Whilst obviously at the minute it has to be done this way, I don't think that longer term this would be for the benefit of the staff, the benefit of the clients and the residents, if all of this was done by phone going forwards, or Zoom, etc.
Yes, indeed, there's a lot more to it, isn't there, going into a care home and seeing how it's run and how people feel, rather than just answering questions over the phone. I just wanted to finish by asking you both if you could give, I don't know, one or two bits of sort of clear advice for care home providers who may be preparing for one of these calls. What would you say, Neil? I mean, how much of this is around sort of, I don't know, getting some early legal advice?
I don't think that legal advice before a telephone call is necessary. I mean, providers will be familiar with the type of questions that will be coming to them from the inspectors, and that they should be capturing information. Obviously, there's an issue about recording through this period, how they've done that. But I just think they just need time to have a sort of spreadsheet work with the questions and the answers, so that they have a structure to that conversation. They feel confident going into it, and they can actually properly describe how their service is managing. The CQC say that they're not looking for evidence. So on one level, it seems a fairly light touch process, which seems strange, bearing in mind, obviously, it is an assessment at the same time. But there may be a necessity to, or it may be necessary, rather, to supply some information to CQC to assure them about certain matters on the back of a telephone conversation. I mean, clearly, if there's a follow-up conversation, that would tend to indicate that CQC do have some concerns, and you'll see that from the summary record when it arrives. I think at that stage, I mean, I think, you know, you'd need to sort of think about the situation, because there is the possibility, obviously, that that matters could sort of escalate in certain limited situations. I think if CQC was saying, look, we're going to come in and we're going to do an inspection, then that would clearly indicate that there were serious concerns about the particular service. And you would, I think, be in that situation, be well advised to, I think, seek professional help.
Right. And David, what would your message be today to a provider who's maybe listened to this and thinking, okay, I really need to sit down, prepare and take this, you know, make sure I am in the right frame of mind? What would you say?
I think preparation is key, the most important thing. But I think as well, don't worry about it. I think as long as you've prepared and you can answer the questions, I think the CQC inspectors will be fine. And if there are a couple of shortfalls, or if you know that there's a couple of things that you haven't done exactly correct, as long as you've got a plan and you can say to the inspector, okay, so we didn't get that 100% right, this is the plan is to rectify the situation, and we'll have it done by such and such a date. I think that's really important. Think about the responses to the different questions. I wouldn't guarantee, or I can't guarantee, that the telephone conversation is only going to be an hour. I've spoken to a couple of clients, and theirs went on for 2 hours. And it wasn't difficult. It was just the inspector was being thorough. And the client said, you know, that the inspector wasn't being awkward. The inspector was just being thorough. So don't think I'm just going to be on the phone for an hour. It's going to be really easy. I think prepare for it in terms of it's going to be difficult. And then if it isn't difficult, you know, rather over-prepare than under-prepare. I think that's really important. And don't think that those 15 questions that they released, don't think that those are going to be the only questions asked. The same as in an interview. You know, an interviewer goes in with a pre-prepared set of questions, but as you're answering the questions, they'll then pick up on certain things that they want to ask more information about or require more information. So this is exactly the same. You're not just going to be asked those 15 questions. You will be asked supplementary questions and prepare for those. Yes. I think be open and transparent. I think have somebody with you taking notes, an administrator or somebody else with you taking notes. Type up the notes at the end in terms of your understanding of the conversation you've just had. And I would then email the inspector and say, this is my understanding of the conversation we've just had with these various action points. And we will comply with and we'll get these action points sorted by such and such a day. I think it's probably more likely than not that CQC will start doing on-site inspections as soon as they're able to. They'll obviously have a big backlog, but I think they will start coming out again. And I would also say to providers, call it whatever you want to, like a coronavirus file that's got all of the different paperwork, your amended policies and procedures, your updated business continuity plan, infection control procedures, everything that you've done whilst managing this crisis since you know, February up until they finally arrive, have everything in that folder or file. And when they turn up, you can just then hand them the folder. He has everything that we've done over the last 6 months to help us manage the coronavirus pandemic as best we could.
Yeah, excellent. Just finally then back to you, Neil, on that point. I mean, being open, being proactive, and responding in that way, would you agree with that?
Oh, entirely. Yes, I would. I mean, I think that advice from David is first rate, you know, to have those recordings, because and also obviously for the purposes of CQC, but obviously sort of in terms obviously the effective delivery and continuity of the service, you should have that sort of information to hand. There is the prospect of litigation further down the line. I mean, clearly sort of around sort of employment claims potentially. Also in terms of personal injury, medical negligence claims, depending on the setting. So the recording, I think, aspect as well is generally important, obviously important for the purposes of the emergency support framework, but also more generally, say, sort of what efforts did you make to try to obtain PPE, for example? You know, hopefully you should have an audit trail of all of that so you can show everything that you did in the difficult circumstances that providers have faced over the last couple of months. So I think it's important to be positive. I think it's important to be open and to try and develop a collaborative relationship with CQC, which I very much hope will continue into the future.
Well, that's all we've got time for. So thank you both gentlemen for a great, insightful and very interesting podcast. So thank you to Neil Grant, partner at law firm Gordon's Partnership, and to David Beattie, health and social care consultant with Care Ideals. You've been listening to the Care Home Management Magazine special podcast on the CQC Emergency Support Framework with me, Steve Hemsley, and the podcast sponsored by Smooth Digital, helping fill care and nursing home beds with private paying residents. Thank you for listening. We'll be back with more podcasts over the next few weeks. In the meantime, stay safe.